Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. The New Zealand International Comedy Festival is almost upon us. Next Thursday is when things kick off in Auckland, but there's plenty going on across May throughout New Zealand. Kylie Aitchison is heading the festival here for her first time and joins us now. So Kylie, another comedy festival approaches, starting next week, in fact.
Yeah, so it's all very exciting. It's our, I think, 17th festival this year, and it starts on next Friday, the 1st of May.
Is this the first one you've been in charge of?
Yep, this is my first. I've been producing for the festival for 6 years, and this is my first where the training wheels have come off, and it's all me, which is really exciting and scary.
Is there anything particularly different about this year? Because I imagine, you know, after 17 years, that there are certain ways it runs.
Yeah, the festival sort of runs, you know, we're increasing our ticket sales. We have been increasing ticket sales every year, so we've been growing, which has been really, really exciting. We try and change sort of our programming sort of slant every year. So this year we've got three performers that haven't been in the festival for about 10 years. So Paul Ego, Andrew Clay and Philip Patson have all come back to the festival, which is really exciting. Andrew Clay's written a play, which he's doing. So we've sort of, that sort of older performers coming back and then performers trying something new is sort of the sort of what...
Yeah, I've noticed it seemed to be quite high concept, particularly from the local... Benjamin Crowan's got that...
The Apocalypse Now. Yeah, I think, and that seems to be a trend that it's no longer you just stand on stage for an hour and you talk. It's you create a concept and you create a show and you put... And comedians put a huge amount of work into creating this concept and they really take it
The Benjamin Crowan one, he's got that great poster as well.
Him standing at the end of the world.
Yeah,
and it is. It's sort of... The easier it is with... once performers create sort of a hook or a concept, it's sort of... If they take it as far throughout their marketing, then that's really exciting as well.
You say that you've been steadily growing, for 17 years now. I mean, with the international, credit crunch, global meltdown... Have you noticed that?
Yeah, people have been booking later. I mean, our gala, which is our big the Crunchy Comedy Gala, the big opening night, it's sold out in 2 days, which is the fastest it's ever sold. We're getting a lot of demand from audiences inquiring, but they seem to be booking later. I think we're quite lucky in that, you know, everyone needs a laugh. Like, really, there's been so much doom and gloom. There's been hard news. It's just that the idea to get out, treat yourself, and enjoy yourself is really sort of what we're pushing. And our ticket prices are really low. A lot of the shows sit around $20, so it's not a huge stretch. So we're hopeful.
I'm actually always surprised and impressed by how many people actually go and consume comedy, even outside the festival. Oh, there's a big audience for it, isn't it?
Yeah, and it sort of seems to have changed in the last, the last year, that comedy's really become an entertainment event. I know the Classic's been every Wednesday night for about the last 2 years. It has been full. I went down to try and go into the show and there was queues out the door. The show had sold out at 10 a.m. So it seems that comedy has now become part of the entertainment landscape in New Zealand.
Yeah, and I was astonished at how many young people are going to. I
mean,
that Wednesday night at the Classic, we actually make a TV show in the same venue beforehand and we have time to get out. And then there's this...
It's full of children.
It just packs out.
Yeah.
Full of children, yes.
It is. And that's really... I think it's that younger sort of almost that YouTube internet generation that have been watching comedy on the internet and then they're going, oh, yeah, okay, we'll go out and see this. And they're giving it a chance. And, yeah, they're young, they're dressed up, and that's what they do. They book, they get the groups of friends together. So it's really great for us and really encouraging that we've got this new audience really coming through. And it seems to be the entry point into the arts as well.
That's interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. So does that have an impact on the kind of acts that you book?
It does. It will. It's only really sort of started in the last year. So we've got a show, Chopper, obviously, this year is doing really, really, really well. And that's that viral sort of clip that went around the internet. He's been on C4. Die does really well. So there's sort of, we've got quite distinct audiences. We've got quite, you know, a sort of a 18 to 25 audience now, which we haven't really had before, that it's, you know, been a little bit older.
And of course, on the other hand, you've got the likes of Ed Byrne, who's been coming forever.
He loves it. He got engaged here last time he came. He brought his lovely wife, got engaged in Kaikoura, and now she's coming back.
And I'm told, and we probably can't say too much about this now, but there's going to be another New Zealand comedy based show coming up on our screens very shortly.
There's one being filmed at the moment,
so
which we're waiting with bated breath. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you, Kylie. We're about to hear from your equivalent over in Melbourne, but look, thank you and good luck for the festival over the next month.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me.
Kylie Aitchison there. Of course, our comedy festival is but part of a circuit. Nigel McCulloch caught up with Susan Proven, the director of Melbourne's comedy festival, to see how they do things over there.
My job I'm the CEO of the organisation, so I'm kind of responsible for everything in the end. But I have a fantastic team of colleagues who work with me on all the relevant bits. But I suppose our festival's a bit of a hybrid compared to other big arts festivals around the world. So on the one hand, we're an open festival. So like the Edinburgh Fringe or the Adelaide Fringe, anyone from Australia or New Zealand, basically anyone who doesn't need a visa, can pay their registration fee and participate in the festival. And they take all their own risk and they have their own producers or they self-produce and they risk the next 6 months' rent to put on a show. Or if they're the big stars from Australia, they actually make the next 6 months' rent putting on a show. But, you know, it takes a while to get to that point. But as well as that, we actually curate a large program of overseas guest artists. So we, and that's part of my, large part of my job, is travelling around looking for the best in international contemporary comedy to bring to Australia, to bring to Melbourne, to present to people who don't get to travel and don't get to go to Edinburgh every year, for example, to see what's going on over there. So we bring people in, they usually do the four-week Melbourne run, and then quite often we tour people into Sydney and Brisbane and elsewhere, Adelaide Fringe, other things.
How do you judge who's worthy of coming to the festival?
I don't know. There's a lot of people worthy that I wouldn't necessarily also bring out. It's kind of a juggling act between bringing out people that you know are worthy and know are artistically important and know that a lot of people are going to want to see, so the budgets are going to stack up. But we also, I think it's also really important to bring out people who are artistically important and who particularly the local comedy community and the real comedy aficionados in the audience are going to want to see, but they may not necessarily be people who are going to sell a lot of tickets. So I need to balance those two sides fairly carefully so that in the end, the balance between the fabulous ones who will send tickets with the fabulous ones who won't necessarily sell lots of tickets, in the end it will all break even.
You're talking a lot there about selling tickets. How do you know which acts are going to sell tickets? How do you judge that?
You don't know. You never know what's going to sell tickets. I mean, you can take a punt. I mean, we're in showbiz and it's a real punt. It's not like selling toilet paper where you know people need something and they're going to go out and buy it. When you're selling the performing arts, it's all about gut feelings. And, you know, I've been in this business for 25 years, so I've got fairly good gut feelings that are just built up over experience. But, you know, in the end, it's a giant punt. You really don't know. And that's one of the joys of it too. Every year we present about 20 overseas artists, and generally I'm close to on the money in what sells and what doesn't, but every year there are one or two surprises where someone goes off that I really didn't think would go quite so well, and where someone maybe won't sell who I really thought was going to sell.
What process do you go through to find these artists that come over, these comedians that come over?
To look for artists, the most straightforward way is to go to the big festival. So I go to Montreal Just for Laughs and I go to Edinburgh every year because that's an easy way to see a lot of performers in a short space of time in venues that are walking distance from each other, so it saves a lot of time. But particularly with Montreal, you don't see people doing whole shows. You generally see people doing a lot of 7-minute spots, so that's more of an introductory exercise. I also spend quite a bit of time in New York and Los Angeles just sitting in clubs, seeing comedians. And if I hear stuff about people who are good, I'll go and seek them out, go and see them. So, and I usually spend a bit of time in London as well. So really Edinburgh, London, Montreal, New York, Los Angeles are where the bulk of the research goes, with little, you know, side excursions elsewhere when people tell me about something that I really must see.
Do you find it hard being in Australia? Because it's quite a trip for a lot of comedians. Mm.
It is quite hard. It's much easier to get British people down here than it is to get North Americans. I think because with the British, there's just that whatever traditional ancient connection. And British people, because most of them have the experience of Edinburgh, they understand the festival environment. And so they understand that when you do it for the first time, there's probably not going to be a lot of money in it, that you need to develop an audience. You know, that's if you don't have a big television or film profile. They understand that you need to invest a couple of years in building up an audience, and they will come down because they know it's going to be fun. Whereas North Americans, Americans and Canadians, they don't have that Edinburgh experience to base their knowledge of what Melbourne will be like on, so it can be more difficult. You know, you talk to managers who say, you know, why would I send my client to Melbourne for 4 weeks for that pissy amount of money, you know, when they could be here earning a lot more? And, you know, I see they're saying, well, because they'll have a good time. So you tend to get, with the Yanks, you tend to get, you know, there are always those exceptional ones who just love to play in front of new audiences and who have that sense of adventure, and they will come and they don't care about the money. For a lot of Americans and Canadians, the pinnacle of their careers is in North America. You know, they all want to be the next Seinfeld. So really, unless they are particularly interesting and adventurous, why would they go to Melbourne for a month? Because there's nothing there for them in terms of huge career.
Susan Proven, the director of Melbourne's Comedy Festival there. If you're interested in the New Zealand International Comedy Festival, it runs 1st to the 24th of May, and you can find out more about it at comedyfestival.co.nz. After the break, Steve Coogan and Independent Record Stores. Yes, they still exist.